Club football has taken a break. International football is finally upon us once again, 2 to 3 months after the African Cup of Nations. And I'm very much looking forward to previewing what the next 2 weeks are going to mean for African national teams all around the continent. Welcome to another episode of the African Five-A-Side Podcast. My name is Maher Mizahi. I'm your host. And as always, this podcast is brought to you by people over at Africa is a Country. Really great website if you're interested in anything African affairs. So this March window, every year in March, we have an international break. And this one is important because, as South African coach Hugo Bruce said, this is the last window where you could have friendly matches up until the World Cup for African nations, because from every single international window from now until the upcoming World Cup in the Americas, we're going to have qualifying matches. Now, sometimes there's just going to be one qualifying match and you could sort of schedule a friendly before or after. We can obviously also schedule friendlies before the next upcoming African Cup of Nations, but this is the last one that's strictly open for friendlies. And so I wanted to just profile a few different national teams and categorize them into three categories. The first one is continuation, meaning these are national teams that are going to just be continuing what they did at the previous AFCON because they don't need to correct anything. The second one is going to be reset. These are three nations that failed pretty horribly at the AFCON and had to reset everything, and we're going to judge to see if they're now ready to continue if they're ready to restart all over again on the right basis. And then finally, we have a category that is still not ready. These are national teams that, despite the fact that they failed at the AFCON and they've had the time to get ready, they're still not ready. So let's start with continuation. These are, again, sides that are probably not going to be changing much. And the obvious first team to speak about is La Côte d'Ivoire, the African champions, the Ivory Coast, Les Elephants. As we all remember at the AFCON, they came in with one coach, a Frenchman, Jean-Louis Gasset, who, by the way, is now the coach at Olympique de Marseille and is having great results with them. So many, many people believe that he's actually a good coach, but just the circumstances weren't right for him at the AFCON for one reason or another. So Gasset was obviously, he actually resigned halfway through the competition. Amers Faye, the 40-year-old Ivorian former international, got the job as a caretaker manager. And he led La Côte d'Ivoire to a trophy on home soil. Absolutely fantastic feat. And the question was, okay, what now? You know, I don't think anybody expected him to do what he did, especially after that 4-0 loss to Equatorial Guinea in the last match of the group stages in Group A. Remember that his own federation and government, they were pursuing Hervé Renard to try and give him a contract instead of Amers Faye. And I think you could only come to the conclusion that they would extend him, right? I mean, how can you fire a coach that won you the AFCON? And that's exactly what the Ivorian Federation did. They gave him a really great contract where he's going to be making, you know, a top 3 to 5 salary on the continent. But I think what the Ivorian Federation did that's very smart is they gave him a contract with a lot of objectives. So I believe at the next AFCON, if he doesn't qualify at least until the semifinals, the Ivorian Federation can nullify his contract. So they gave him good money as a reward. They signed him on for a few more years. But if he fails, if that proved to be a fluke, what happened at the previous AFCON, they have, you know, triggers in the clauses in the contract that they can just activate and get rid of Amers Faye. Amers Faye, I think, did a really good job here in this this window of calling up as many players as he could that were African champions. So I think there were 26, if I'm not mistaken, in the Ivorian squad, and I think he called up 23 out of those 26. The others, I believe, were injured. Players like Sebastian Allaire either were injured or their clubs asked them to stay back. So this is just going to be an extension of the celebration for the Ivorians. It's not really an international window where they're looking to progress in football sense. They're not trying to test new players. This is just rewarding the players that brought their country glory. And so that's obviously, that's why they're in this category of continuation. The second country that I'm going to put in here might be a little bit of a surprise for people, but I'm going to put Senegal. I listened to Aliou Cisse's press conference 3 days ago. There's no crazy changes at all. He's been extended until 2025 AFCON, not the World Cup, which I thought was a little bit surprising. But remember, Aliou Cisse has been in the job now for about 8 to 9 years. And I thought what he was saying was interesting. He was saying, like, look, I'm not the one that's hanging on to this job. If the people at the Federation think I'm no longer competent, they can just ask me to leave and I'll go. He even said that one of the best pieces of advice he ever got in the coaching world was that never settle anywhere. Never unpack your suitcase, because on the drop of a dime, you could be out of there. And he says, like, his office is pretty much packed up. Whenever they ask him to go, he can go. So I thought that was interesting. But still, no changes really in his squad at all. I think he recognized that this is a window where they have friendly matches. I think they're playing against Benin, and I forget the second team they're playing against. But one of the questions the Senegalese journalist asked was, why do we always play small teams? And he said, you know, we would like to play, you know, Brazil, but does Brazil want to play against Senegal? So they're basically called up most of the same players, with the exception of one very, very young talent, Amara Diouf. For those of you that don't know Amara Diouf, best player at the under-17 AFCON, maybe a top 5 talent in the world for his age. He's been called up with the senior national team before with Senegal, and everybody says he's the successor to Sadio Mane. Some people think he might even become better, and that's obviously a lot of pressure to put on a young kid, but it's a good sign that he keeps being called up and everybody still has great things to say about him. But yeah, besides things like that, calling up, you know, 3-4 young players, it's same old for Senegal. So they're very much in the continuation phase. And the final team we're going to talk about is South Africa. Very, very similar squad to the one that was called up to the AFCON. Some minor adjustments. Hugo Bruce left Percy Tau at home. And one of the things that I thought was shocking is in a press conference or in a sit-down with journalists, he said that the AFCON broke Percy Tau. And remember, Percy Tau, I believe he missed a penalty. I think it was the match against Mali in the group stages, right? And I think overall at the AFCON, he was probably subpar. He didn't really play up to his usual brilliant standards. And I think the South African fans were a little bit harsh on him. Maybe justifiably so. But Percy Tau still wanted to come to represent his national team as they prepare to play this FIFA series tournament in Algeria. Matches, I believe, against Andorra and Algeria on March 26th. A match that I should be at. So he wanted to come, but Hugo Bruce thought it would be a better idea if he just sat back, relaxed, refreshed his memory, and came, you know, and he's going to probably be called up, you know, ready again for the June window. Final thing I'd say about South Africa is that although, you know, Hugo Bruce pretty much called up practically the same players, and this is very much a continuation of what we saw at the AFCON, I thought it was interesting to see him make a few comments about looking forward to the World Cup and maybe picking players that could be ready at the next World Cup. So talking about, for example, replacing Temba Zwane with Patrick Maswanganyi, I always struggle with his name, from Pirates. I thought that was weird. I don't know, like, Temba Zwane hasn't really shown, not to say that Patrick doesn't deserve the call-up, but Temba Zwane hasn't really shown any sign of decrease. I understand he's old, but some players, you know, you can't put an age on when a player is going to start declining in terms of performance. It seems like he's thinking about replacing a group of players like Temba Zwane. He talked about, you know, Mofokeng from Pirates, who many of you told me is probably one of the best talents on the continent as well. And he said he should also be a name that we continue to look at in the future. And it's good that clubs are starting to launch young players in the PSL. So I don't know. I thought it was just curious to see that Hugo Bruce seems intent on rotating older players out of his team prior to the Americas World Cup. And I think it just might be a bit premature. I think the same group that finished third in this AFCON can probably hang on for two more years before the 2026 World Cup, but we'll see. The next category of teams is teams that need to reset. And we're going to start with the Ghanaian Black Stars. Ghana, after they were practically qualified to the knockout stages of the AFCON, if you remember, they were winning 2-0 against Mozambique in the final minutes of the game, and they conceded two goals in the last 5 minutes, 2-2. And this is the second consecutive humiliation at the African Cup of Nations for Ghana, a very, very proud footballing nation. And it just set, you know, fire to the powder keg. Journalists blocked the team bus from leaving the stadium. They demanded that the players speak with them. The players refused to speak to them. People were insulting each other. Chris Hughton immediately resigned, of course, the former Premier League coach. Back home, journalists launched a hashtag Save Ghana Football movement where they're protesting at the GFA, the Ghanaian Federation offices. Just like really, really bad, venomous vibes in Ghana. And so what the Ghanaian Federation does is they put together a committee, a selection committee, a hiring committee to find Ghana's new coach. And according to the information that many of the colleagues have put forth, they opened it up and they announced that they're accepting CVs. And I think this is a stupid strategy, you know, like it's especially humiliating when you say we're accepting CVs and then like Ghana, I think they weren't happy with any of the CVs that came in. They didn't like any of the resumes. And so what they end up doing is they themselves approached Otto Addo, the coach of the Ghana Black Stars at the 2022 World Cup, who was currently employed at Borussia Dortmund as a sort of talent scout or a player trainer. He has like a dual role kind of, works with a lot of young players at Dortmund. But he has his UEFA Pro license. He's highly qualified. He has experience coaching the Ghana Black Stars before. So the GFA approached him. They said, hey, are you interested? He said, yes. They said, can you apply with your CV? He applies. And apparently he knocked it out of the park in the interview process, or so we're told. And so he's handed the job. And I think they've been fair to him. They give him a contract of $50,000 per month, which is, you know, good for Ghana. I think the last time a coach has had this salary was Avram Grant. So I don't know when the last time a Ghanaian coach got this salary. And, you know, I think Ghanaians online have been criticizing his record. I think his previous stint as the Ghana coach, he coached 12 matches, won 4, drew 4, and lost 4. And so they say he only won 33% of his matches the last time around. But the matches he lost against were Portugal, Japan, Uruguay and Brazil. Two of those were at the FIFA World Cup. I mean, it's not like he was losing to scrubs. So Otto Addo, he signs on for 3 years. There's an option to extend his contract for 5 years. I think the GFA really think that this is like a long-term solution. They trust him. He's competent. He has the badges. And so we're very much in a wait-and-see kind of respect right now, right? I like some of the call-ups he made, bringing, you know, a lot of Right to Dream graduates into the fold. And I like the talent that Ghana has, honestly. So I think Ghana's on the up. I think for them, the dark days are behind them for now, but we'll see. We'll see. The second team we have in the reset is Egypt. Egypt, like Ghana, eliminated in the group stages of the African Cup of Nations. And Egypt had, you know, they were paying their coach the second highest salary on the continent, $200,000. Rui Vitória, the Portuguese coach, and they ask him to resign. He refuses to resign. They fire him. They have to pay him a penalty, as was stipulated in his contract. And they hire a local option, like Ghana did. They hire Hussam Hassan and his brother Ibrahim Hassan as an assistant. So Hussam Hassan is the coach, and Ibrahim Hassan is a sort of team manager, whatever that means. But I think it just means like assistant, pretty much. What you have to know about the Hassan twins is that they are, first of all, two of the greatest players in Egyptian football history. Hussam, the coach, was a striker. Ibrahim was a right back. I think most of you who remember African football in the 80s and 90s will remember them. Very, very, very good players. But they're also crazy. They have histories of, you know, like fighting with journalists, fighting with players, insulting people, you know, fighting, breaking cameras, just like they're nuts, pretty much. Steal on one occasion, stealing an AK-47 like when they're playing a friendly and for a match against a Lebanese team. So I don't know how this is going to turn out. They're not getting paid a lot of money. I think they're on, if I'm not mistaken, around $30,000-$35,000 a month. That might be for the whole staff. I'm not sure if that's just for the coach or the whole staff. And while the players might respect them because of what they did in the past as players, you know, themselves, I think there's always a respect between former players as coaches and current players, because they say, I know what you're going through. I know what you're feeling. I was in this position. You know, although it was 15, 20 years ago, I was in this position that you're in right now. So I think players will respect that. But at the same time, they've never coached players of the ilk of Mohamed El-Nenni or Mohamed Salah. You know, some of these big, big players, even Trezeguet. I don't think they've ever coached players like that. So do they know how to manage egos? You know, the modern footballer is like often a sensitive, individualistic, you know, entity. Can the Hassan brothers deal with that? That's something that we're going to see. But I'm very, very curious to see what their press conferences look like and if they explode at any of their players over the next few years. I don't think this is a good hire. I think the Ghanaian hire is a good hire, Otto Addo. I don't think the Egypt hire is a good hire. I think it's going to end probably in disappointment in about a year's time in Morocco. The third and final team we have in the reset bracket is Algeria. Algeria, immediately after they were eliminated, like Ghana, for the second consecutive AFCON in the group stages, the new FA president announced that, you know, they're splitting ways with the coach Jamal Belmadi, even though he himself didn't actually sign the papers. I think he still didn't sign the papers technically, but they went their separate ways, and Algeria opens up their coaching search. They did approach Jose Pissarro. They did approach Vahid Halilhodžić. They did approach Carlos Queiroz, who I think was the first option. But they land on Vladimir Petkovic. Vladimir Petkovic, who was the former Swiss national team manager for a long period of time, I believe 7 or 8 years. He was their manager at the World Cup, at the European Championships. He also coached teams like Lazio. He coached in Switzerland for a long period of time. And so his CV is quite good. You know, I believe he's on $100,000 a month, which is about half of what the previous coach Jamal Belmadi was making, but still a significant amount of money for Algeria. But yeah, I think it was good to get him in early. He was hired in February. I like his staff that he brought in, especially, you know, like the physio prep guy Paolo Rangoni, Italian, has a fantastic reputation. I believe he was on the staff at Roma and a few different very highly touted Italian clubs and the Swiss national team. But when I look at the squad and the list of players that Vladimir Petkovic called up for this FIFA series tournament, to be honest, I'm kind of disappointed. A lot of changes were made, but they're not the changes that I was anticipating. I think he left a lot of very good players out. He included a lot of mediocre players, old players that probably needed to be left out. He did leave out Riyad Mahrez, or according to reports, Riyad Mahrez called the coach and said, hey, I'd like to sit this international breakout, like Mohamed Salah did for Egypt. It doesn't seem like Riyad Mahrez is completely out of the national team. He'll probably be called up in June. Islam Slimani, however, the veteran forward, he was left out, and he wasn't happy that the federation didn't call him to explain that he was going to be left out. So that's pretty much where we're at with Petkovic, where everybody's anticipating, waiting to see what the next week to 2 weeks is going to look like. According to the reputation that he has as a coach at Bordeaux and with Switzerland, his team can score goals, but they can also concede a lot of goals. So I don't know. I think that suits Algeria, but it's worrying because Algeria's biggest problem is still central defense and defensive midfield. And if he doesn't fix those problems, I think he's going to have very deep troubles adapting to this job in Algeria. So as much as I like the Ghanaian hire, as much as I didn't like the Egyptian hire, the Algerian one, I'm still kind of 50-50 on. Finally, let's get to the fun part. The still not ready category. And let's start with the worst, Cameroon. About a month ago, Samuel Eto'o, the president of the Cameroonian Federation, he goes on France 24, which is, you know, the French equivalent of the BBC, you can say. It's their international nonstop news channel. And he sits down with, what's that guy's name? The interviewer, I think is Mark Perelman. He's always interviewing presidents of different countries. Bald guy, pretty good journalist. And so again, this guy usually interviews presidents. And now he's interviewing Samuel Eto'o. It's really bizarre. And for 10 minutes, Eto'o is talking about, he denies all allegations that came out over the last 6 months to 1 year against him. And if you're not familiar, he's been accused of, there's phone recordings of him promising that he would influence referees to fix matches in favor of different clubs in Cameroon. I think Victoria United, if I'm not mistaken, is one of those clubs. The president of Victoria United is quite famously one of Eto'o's best friends and somebody that really backed him as he was trying to become the Cameroonian FA president. So this is like a tit for tat. You do this for me, I'll do that for you. So he denies that. I don't know if he's trying to insinuate that the recording was fake. It sounded very, very real. I'm not a forensic digital analyst, but it sounds very real to me. He signed like a contract with 1xBet, a betting company, and then like a personal contract for himself as a federation president. And then they also become the leading sponsor for the Cameroonian League. So there's a very clear conflict of interest there. There were a few different things. He kicked a fan, an Algerian fan in Qatar, although he was being provoked. But he lost control there and physically abused somebody else. And now most recently, Samuel Eto'o. I mean, we're going through the long list of controversies over the last 18 months. But most recently, the Cameroonian League announced that there are more than 60 players in the domestic league that have a double nationality. Double identity. I wish it was just double nationality. And amongst them, the Victoria United notorious Nathan Douala, who was the youngest player in the... supposedly the youngest player in the Cameroonian national team. He's supposed to be 17 years old. But a French media named Le Monde did an investigation and they found that they spoke to him a couple years back when he was playing for Oryx Douala. And he told them that his name was Alexander Bardelli and that he, at the time, I believe, was 21 or 22 years old. And this is a player with the same scar above his eyebrow, same tattoos on his calf. It's obviously the same person. Why is this a scandal? This is obviously a huge scandal because, number one, the player was playing for Oryx Douala at the time, and now he's playing for Victoria United. So it's not like this player came out of nowhere. He was playing in the league. So for me, I'm kind of even mad at the journalists and the people should have known about this. And if they didn't know, why didn't anybody say anything? That's number one. Number two, we know that Samuel Eto'o is very close friends with the president of Victoria United. We spoke about the fact that, you know, he promised that he would, the referees would help his club out and so on and so forth. Things that he denies, right? Even though there's a recording of the phone call. This player plays for Victoria United. So for me, like my cynical mind, the way I've heard so many stories on the continent, this sounds like a typical story that you hear of a player reducing his age, gets called up to the national team just so they can have that status of Cameroonian international and then sold, and the club makes money off of his sale. And here it seems like the federation was helping the club out. So Eto'o was helping his friend at Victoria United out. That's just how it seems. Obviously, all of these are still allegations, but they're very convincing allegations at the moment. And so that's where we find ourselves with Samuel Eto'o. And it, by the way, if this proves to be true, and if there proves to be some collusion between the federation and the club and the player to cheat for his age, Cameroon are looking for probably two AFCON suspensions, you know, and Samuel Eto'o, I believe, is staring straight down the pipe of a lengthy ethics investigation and probably suspension from FIFA and the Confederation of African Football, who he thinks he's going to be able to counter-sue and fight in the justice system. So it's a mess in Cameroon. It's a big, big, big mess. They don't have a coach yet. They're not playing any friendlies, although practically the whole continent is playing friendlies. They refuse to play. They don't have a coach. And not to mention, by the way, that Eto'o announced, and it's common knowledge that from now on, he's not really going to be able to name the coach, or he will be able to name the coach, but he has to seek approval from the presidents, which is, I don't think it's Paul Biya, but it's people at the presidency who are going to greenlight his decision. So he's kind of losing some autonomy. He's kind of losing some power. That's a clear, in my opinion, violation of the law that, you know, that says politics can't get involved in football, like FIFA's cardinal law. But that's where we are with Cameroon at the moment. So there are some names that have been thrown about. Maybe the return of Tony Conceição, who did a great job with Cameroon, but then Eto'o inexplicably fired. Some people are even saying José Peseiro, the former Nigeria coach. But we'll see. Cameroon are in a mess, and that's why I have them at the still not ready. I would even put Cameroon in the not even close to being ready part of this podcast. The other two teams I still have, I have in the still not ready category, Nigeria, who we just spoke about with José Peseiro. And the thing I don't understand about Nigeria is they had a great tournament. Yeah, they go to the final. Okay, people were not happy with how Nigeria played in the final. And I think that's completely understandable, completely comprehensible, right? They kind of sat back. Ivory Coast took the match to them. And I think Cote d'Ivoire were deserved winners. I don't think anybody would dispute that if you watched the final 90 minutes of the tournament. The thing with Nigeria that I don't understand is, okay, the tournament finishes, and you know that José Peseiro's contract is going to run out in February, and you don't have to extend him. Why not make a decision immediately with José Peseiro? Why drag this thing out, wait for his contract to expire? He's fielding offers from everywhere all over the place, and he decides to move on as well. Why did this drag on so much? Have a discussion with him. Say, hey, this is what we're able to offer. If you can't take it, or if you're looking for somewhere else, you're free to leave. We're going to commence our search for your successor. Or if he accepts, then extend him and move on with things. So Nigeria are in a weird place now where they also don't have a coach. Augustine Egwuevan, who was the predecessor of José Peseiro, remember, he did a great job with them at the AFCON in Cameroon, but they suffered a premature round of 16 exit to Tunisia, and then he failed to get them to the World Cup. Remember, they lost because of a very bad goalkeeping error against Ghana. So Augustine Egwuevan is the technical director of the federation, if I'm not mistaken. And there are rumors that he's the one that's going to be, you know, coaching on an interim basis. By the way, I'm recording this on a Tuesday. Ghana plays against Nigeria on Friday, and we still don't know who the coach is. We don't know if it's going to be Augustine Egwuevan. There are very serious rumors that Finidi George, who's currently the coach at Enyimba FC, could take over as an interim coach. There are rumors that it could be Emmanuel Amunike. Like, the match is in 3 days. That's what I don't understand. Like, even tonight, there should be training. How don't we know who the coach is going to be that's going to be training these players? And they have matches. It's not like Cameroon that doesn't have a match. So for me, that's not serious. Cameroon are not serious. Nigeria not serious. I mean, the counter argument is like, who cares? It's just friendlies, right? But why are you wasting everybody's time then? Why are you calling players to leave their clubs to come down? And that's why probably players like Victor Osimhen didn't even come through, because, okay, if you're not taking this window seriously, why would I take it seriously? You know? So, no, Nigeria don't have a coach, and for me, that's not serious. That's why they're still not ready. And the last team I would put in this category are maybe Tunisia. Tunisia, unlike Nigeria, they made the decision very quickly after the AFCON that they were going to go to an interim pair of coaches. Muntasar Luheshi is one of them. He's the former Club African coach, and he also coached Tunisia under 20, I believe, at a recent World Cup. Very defensive style there. I wonder if that's going to translate to the senior national team. And he's going to be shouldered by Anis Bouzaidi, another local coach. And people in Tunisia tell me, like, this is very uninspiring. This is much of the same that we had with the previous few coaches. Local coaches that aren't even the best Tunisian coaches. We're not talking about, you know, like Nasreddine Nebi, who won, you know, with Yanga for the last 2-3 years and now is leading the league with Far Rabat. There are good coaches in Tunisia, or Tunisian good coaches. Rada Dijaidi is another one of them. No, these are coaches that were kind of considered mediocre on a Tunisian level, and they're the ones that are getting the national team. So, I mean, the counter argument from the federation is going to be, look, we don't, their federation president is in jail with the Algeri. So they're going to say, we don't, supposedly the situation with the federation is supposed to get resolved in May now. But it keeps being postponed and postponed. It was supposed to be resolved months ago. Now apparently it's going to be resolved in May. We'll see. So, but the federation might say, like, look, we're going to have to get our affairs in order. Once we do that, if we have a new federation president, then we can go and actually recruit a coach for the long term. But Tunisia, one thing I kind of did like is that they are not bringing any big names. Well, it's the same thing everywhere. I just mentioned it with Nigeria and Osimhen. But here, there's no Youssef Msakni, no Ali Maalul, no Hannibal Mejbri. All of the big names from the Tunisian national team, practically. Not all of them, but many, many of the big names are sitting this one out. And so, technically, it should be, you know, a good opportunity for us to scout some young players, scout some players that are unknown, and have fun watching the matches that way. So, yeah. That's a quick preview of the international break with three categories, you know, teams that are in the continuation of what's been successful, teams that are resetting, and teams that are still not ready. Let me know which matches you're going to watch. I'm definitely going to try to make it out to Algeria versus South Africa in 1 week's time, next Tuesday, at the Nelson Mandela Stadium in Algiers, which is a nice, symbolic, warm, you know. But yeah, let me know which matches you're going to watch, what you're looking forward to seeing, in the comments below, and I'll make sure to respond. Take care, guys. Thanks for listening, and speak soon. Peace.